Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the C-Squared Podcast. This is your host Curtis with my co-host Aaliyah, and we are back here once again for I think Sarah's been on here five times and Jay's been on three or four times. They're one of our most popular guests, I guess. So it's Sarah and Jay from Book of Worms. They are back because they have a new song coming out in the next couple weeks, and we're going to be talking touring, we're going to be talking a whole bunch of awesome stuff. So to start us off, I'm going to bring it over to Aaliyah to get the festivities going.
All right. So Soda Pop Glacier, I have to say first and foremost, I really appreciate the bridging of two worlds by using the inclusive term soda pop.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's for everybody. One for everybody.
Yeah. So you mentioned, I read the description that you put on Bandcamp, and you mentioned in there that the process was quite different from your usual when it comes to writing music. Can you tell us a little bit about that process and what it was like?
Yeah, definitely. Most of our songs are done in the usual way where you write some riffs and bring them in and everybody jams them and you refine it. This was something I've wanted to do for a long time, which is where you just put a drone on in whatever key, like C. So you just have sort of a C note holding and droning on, and then you improvise over it. And so I did that all by myself at the house, just let the drone go and played bass over it. And then afterwards I chopped out the parts that I didn't like. And so what I was left with was like a bass to a click, and then, added in synthesizers. And then we took it to the studio, and Bobby and Kyle pretty much just improvised their drum and guitar parts over that. And then we left it to Jamie at Absolute Future Studios to kind of mix it as he saw fit. So it was a really intentionally more randomized process, where it's like, instead of picking over everything and writing and composing, it was more like I made a stimulus and then gave that stimulus to the other guys, and then they took it and ran with it. So I got to be surprised by what the final outcome was too.
That's really cool. I mean, what kind of gave you the idea that you wanted to do something like that?
I mean, I've always wanted to do something like that. And as a practice technique, it's like a really good and important thing to do, is just put on a drone and improvise over it. So I've been doing that, my whole musical life since I was younger. And I guess the idea for doing a piece for us, it kind of cemented, because I sort of knew what it would sound like and thought it would be a really cool thing to do that would be a companion to what we already do. I didn't know, like, oh, I want to do it as a single and a one-off and an instrumental and all of that. But I just knew, like, that it would sound good and work in the context. And then, I felt Sarah out about it, and she thought it was a really cool idea and something we could go for on that. And then I felt Brad out at the label about it, and he was like, yeah, that sounds exciting, I want to do that. So it was really cool. Everybody kind of just indulged me and wanted to try something weird and different. But as far as the whole, like, drone and improvisation thing, yeah, that's been a big part of my life for a long, long time. And then, it just it needed drums and guitar, and who better to do it than those guys, because they're already, in tune with us and everything.
I have a random question which has nothing to do with anything that we were talking about, just with the song title, because Aaliyah brought it up. So how did you come up with the song title?
I guess it's, it's stream of consciousness. At one point it was Ginger Ale Glacier, but that didn't really sound as good. And me and Sarah just, like, bounce around weird names like that. And you know, we'll just be like sitting around and I'm like, hey, what about this? And, you know, she'll maybe flip it. And so, you know, we just kind of messed around, but it's again, you know, it's an instrumental song, so it doesn't have to be about the thing it's called, thankfully. Whereas like, if we come up with a crazy song title where she has to sing lyrics, like, it's like, oh, great. All right. We, you know, we said Robot Toad. Now you got to, because it sounded cool. Now you have to invent a Robot Toad character.
So nice.
It's more impressionistic this time. It's just sort of, you know, like the song, if you see the album art, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, very naturalistic. It's about like, you know, storm coming in. And and by the way, when I did the thing at home recording it, there was a storm outside. So it was like a whole vibe and everything. But so yeah, just sort of weird. It's also kind of in the psychedelic tradition to have like, to mix like a food and something else, you know, chocolate wristband, strawberry alarm clock. So it's kind of like a stupid nod to all of that. But at the same time, Soda Pop to me sounds really country, you know, like down homey. And so the idea that it's like, you know, off in some Appalachian mountain range, you know, there's some beautiful little waterfall kind of situation or glacier melting.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And then one last follow-up to that is, because you guys didn't really say, why did Sarah not get involved in the singing? There's a reason.
I mean, it was an improvised instrumental, so, and we knew we wanted an instrumental.
So planned.
But as far as why she didn't do the synth on it, you know, we were planning on that.
Okay.
But it was just like, well, it would be me like explaining what I wanted her to play on the synth and then her playing it on the synth. And it's not like she couldn't do it. It's just like, why tell somebody?
He had this vision and instead of my interpreting it and being like, oh, this is frustrating. I just kind of sat back and just let them like do their thing. And I was like chilling, vibing out like the entire time. And, you know, I was here during some of these, like I came home from the grocery store when he was like doing, I think the bass improvisation. And so I got to hear like a tail end of it. And I think we might've recorded it. So, but anyway, so, you know, I feel like I've been part of it in a way, so.
She was super supportive of everything and like, it wasn't weird like, oh, you're not on this one, because it's like if we were on the album, you know, and it were an instrumental track, it'd be the same way. It was just like, this is, I don't know, it's a long instrumental track, so it's like kind of, you only get, you know, 38-42 minutes on an LP. You know, kind of, I want to have, you know, all rockers and badass songs on there, but that I don't want that to preclude us from like doing cool stuff and experimenting. So doing it online and the way we're doing it digital only was like kind of a cooler way to do it.
Are you doing a Spotify release too, or is it Bandcamp only? I don't remember.
I think it's Brad on Desert Records, he's going to put it on Spotify well. So it'll be on there.
Interesting. I think that's all I had for follow-up on that, Aaliyah.
Yeah, I mean, you anticipated my question, but maybe you could go a little into detail about why you're doing this single release. Why are you doing it as a single? Is there, instead of including it on an album, or is there some strategy behind releasing a single at this point in time?
So the main point is what I was getting at a little bit. You know, you only have like 42 minutes on a vinyl LP. And you know, we're a rock band, a heavy metal band. So the idea of, you know, giving up 9 minutes of that for something that's kind of experimental and ambient. I don't know. Like I said, we want those all to be like rockers, and we didn't want anybody to feel like it was like some kind of filler. It's not filler. At the same time, you don't want to like huge drop in the energy on an album, and the song's a builder, you know, and starts very ambient and ends heavy, which is different than what you're trying to go for on a rock and roll record, which is like a bunch of songs that really kind of get after it and are fun immediately. So that's why it, you know, came out on its own. As for, you know, the strategy of putting it out now, it's like, well, we don't necessarily have, you know, we have a while till the next LP is going to be ready or whatever. And we're writing and learning those songs, but we have this now, you know, it's kind of like, well, it'd be cool to put something out in 22. And
yeah, I think so. It's just a way to tide people over and also be, I don't know, it's a kind of a standalone thing. And it's kind of like its own piece of work. I don't know. So yeah, it just seems like it's kind of like its own thing.
I have one more single question before we move on, which is, how do you guys both feel about singles being released versus albums, out of curiosity?
Well, I'll say that it's weird for me. I've always thought of the album as the basic unit.
Yeah.
So that was another part of the experiment, is like, hey, we've never done this before. What happens if we just put out a single? But so, I mean, it's an experiment in that way. But even with, like, as a fan, I have a hard time with singles because it's just like, sure, hard to collect sometimes. Like, if it's not on one of the LPs, it feels like it's not canon almost. Yeah. Like, it's weird. There's like bands that are really big that I love the albums of, and then there's singles I barely know, because it's like, oh, that was on a Japanese bootleg.
Yep.
Or whatever. So no, you don't have that, or like weird versions. And like, you know, a good example is, you know, the Beatles have the Rain paperback writer single. Like, I don't even know where to physically, like, I love Rain, that's one of my favorite ones of their songs. I don't even know physically where to, like, if I wanted to go buy it and support them. I guess now you would go to Spotify or whatever, but yeah, like, what CD do you get with that on it? Or like some of those Nirvana singles, like Curmudgeon or You Know You're Right. I guess you have to get, like, and obviously then there's the whole, you know, that they take you for a ride when they put like this single you can't get anywhere else unless you get their one disc best of hit, like greatest hits.
Yeah.
It's like, I already own all of these songs, but you know that I have to get this now because of that one thing.
Yeah.
So it depends. I come from like a really raucous perspective where I'm just like, no, LPs is what's up. But then if that's how you think, then you're missing out on like entire genres, like hip hop and reggae and mm-hmm. and soul and electronic music, which I don't, you know, feel like I'm missing out on electronic music really. But like, if you care about that, I think a lot of that's all singles. So yeah. And then, so yeah, part of us putting out a single like that is us, you know, the experiment of like, hey, what if we do that instead of always being LP people?
Yeah. Sure. I think as long as there's a way to put it on your Spotify playlist or make a playlist, I think singles are awesome. And I think it's cool when bands release, you know, even teaser tracks for, like, you know, that do appear on the LP eventually. That's really cool. And I don't know, I think it's really cool when I see other bands do it, so hopefully it'll work out for us.
Cool.
Real quick, I mean, it's not really on, well, it's kind of an adjacent topic. How do you feel about releasing singles on vinyl? Is it just not financially viable, or is it something you'd like to do? What do you think?
Well, I know I hate singles on vinyl personally, like other people's singles on vinyl, because it's like, really, I went in the other room and grabbed this and like carefully slid it out of its jacket and put the jacket somewhere delicate and messed with this stupid arm so that it didn't scratch anything, and I sat down and I picked up my soda and the song's over and it's time to flip the stupid thing, and oh, the song on the other side is like a live version of it because they're just like ripping you off. It's not even a true B-side. I don't know. And like, you know, I used to have a lot of punk friends with the 45s, the 7-inch LPs or 7-inch whatever they are. And it's just annoying. You're like up and down constantly. Like most people I know that had those, you know, used to like dub them all onto a tape, so you'd have like a tape of all your 7 inches, because it's just such a pain in the butt.
Or like my dad had like the singles thing where you could load it into this thing and it would play one after the other and like automatically, so we need one of those
basically like a jukebox. Yeah. But from a business perspective, I've never done it, but my understanding is it's not super viable. I mean, you're paying for well, if it's a 12 inch like LP size, you're paying for all that vinyl and then not even, you know, cutting it and then asking people to pay. Either you're either taking a loss on how much vinyl you're paying for versus what you're charging, or you're ripping people off asking for $12 for a single. And I mean, if it's like a 7 inch, then you're super limited on how much time you can have on there. So it's kind of weird. And then there's these lathe cuts where it's like a weird limited running time and allegedly the sound isn't as good. So I don't know. It just seems like if you're going to charge people for vinyl, the bang for the buck is on the big, you know, give them an LP, use all the space you have.
Really good. So I wanted to talk a bit about touring. You guys, have you done tours on your own before you were on the label?
Yeah.
Are you playing your own tours, basically?
Yeah, definitely. We were doing that, you know. Well, we were on another label before this, and even before that, we were doing our own, you know, regional touring. Reaching out to people, trading shows with locals in other towns, that kind of thing. And then, you know, you start meeting more and more people and striking up conversations and helping each other out.
We worked with a couple of our friends who booked some shows for us, and then in a couple runs for us, and it ended up being a really cool experience. And so we kind of just are DIY now, though, for sure, for now.
We've used a couple of booking agents before, and it was cool. Things are different now. Like, you know, we've made our own friends and can do a lot of that ourselves.
Yeah. So what, I guess, are like some things that you learned from the process that you think would help people getting started, like bands getting started with trying to book tours? What kind of advice would you give them?
This is gonna sound flippant, but
like, you know, you
don't take rejection personally. Like, it's part of it. You're gonna, if you want 10 shows, you're going to have to write to 30 or 50 people. If you want to fill a weekend, you're probably going to have to write to like 10 or 12 people. It doesn't mean anything that they don't get back to you. People are busy. And if you've ever tried to put on a show or talk to people who promote, it's like overwhelming how many people are competing for those spots and hitting everybody up. So it's not personal. Like, you know, when you first start and people don't write you back, it's like, I'll show you, my band will be huge and I'll never hang out with you. But I mean, really, they can't get to everybody. So that's the first part of it. I think that's really important. Another part of it is to just like, really, and you hear it all the time, but like, just be an active part of community. And like, that's, you know, showing up for stuff that you don't have an angle in. Like, it's really cool if you show up because you have a gig coming up and you're trying to like promote your gig, but it's way cooler if you just are someone who shows up to stuff. And that's how you'll hear about things and get asked to do things. And again, people can tell if you're doing it to get asked and to get noticed versus if you're just a nice person that contributes. And you know, there's a big difference there. And that goes with helping other people out with shows too, you know. So you don't always have to go to people like, hey, I think we should trade shows. What weekend do you want to trade shows? You can be like, hey, I really like you guys. Have you played Richmond before? We'd love to, you know, maybe have you next time we're doing a show. Would you guys want to jump on? And then no expectation of anything. And then, you know, lo and behold, a year and a half later, those people are like, hey, we're having a crazy album release bash, and we thought of you because you were nice 2 years ago, and maybe not, and that's cool too. But you know, so yeah, showing up and being friendly, those are really big parts of it. And then, I mean, pay attention, and like, I'm not going to tell somebody on here how to do this because you need to do the same research I did, but pay attention to how you're communicating with people. Learn to do that properly. You're not a drunken bar hooligan approaching someone at the bar. You know, you're emailing a business person and asking them to do you a favor and take a risk on you. You know, you don't have to sound like you went to the Wharton School, but you know, maybe Google how other people do that, because I guarantee you there's like some documents out there that you could just rip off if you want and not sound like a jackass when you reach out to people that you're asking basically to do you a favor, even though they're a stranger.
Top tip, don't sound like a jackass.
Okay. And then usually you want to get in touch if you're trying to go to certain cities or whatever. It's really good to get in touch with the local bands in that area in your genre rather than approach the venues there yourself, because it can be hard to either get a response. Also, you know, some of these other bands maybe either work there or their friends do the booking, you know, so you just never know. But those are the best way places to start.
Yeah, like the worst thing that could happen to you is for a venue to just give you a night. Because I couldn't believe it the first time that happened. I was like, oh man, I'm really getting good at this. These people were just like, yeah, you can have that room. Great, yeah, you've got a room in Pittsburgh now. Like, do you have somebody that knows how to run sound? How much do they want from you for the door? Are you friends with any locals that are gonna play it? Like, you don't want. Basically, if someone gives you a room for the night, you now owe them $120. Like, so yeah, it's way better to like have gotten in touch with bands. Plus the bands are gonna know, like a band will be like, oh, you don't want to play that place. They're known for like luring you down to the freezer and stabbing you and like, you know, stealing your kidney. You definitely don't want to play that venue. So yeah, like exactly what powerful she said. Stuff. Yeah, it's powerful stuff. But yeah. Definitely like try and, especially when you're starting out, try and go through other bands as opposed to the venues. Also, most venues like either have like a really, you know, if they have a dedicated booking person, they're super busy. And if they don't, then you're probably like emailing a bartender and it's like, they're really busy. So yeah, go through bands when you can.
I have a follow-up, Alita, if I may.
Go ahead.
Do you have a horror story that you can give like that, Jay? Because you were talking about getting your kidney getting stabbed and being lured downstairs. So I'm just curious if there's something behind this.
No, and again, it's because of the you know, the relationships with other bands. Like we've definitely gotten, we've been lucky as far as, you know, I've heard horror stories about like really just nothing like that, but like shady promoters and like awful venues and things like that. But again, if you're going through the locals, you know, unless you've picked poorly, they're going to be like, oh, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to go to that place, man. They don't really pay the bands out that well. And that's more the more likely horror story is that the bands are going to get paid out well or they're going to be rude. I don't know anybody that actually got stabbed. But yeah, so no, not really very many horror stories like that, thankfully, because, you know, booking amongst friends and a lot of people that have goodwill towards us because we've helped them out in the past. So they're like, hey, you'll have a much better time if we go to this place. And then even sometimes, you know, the honesty at the level of like, hey, that's actually probably not a great weekend. Maybe you guys want to rain check and we can get you something in March. Cause you know, it's just, that's when their big homecoming is and nobody's going to be downtown, whatever.
Now, I wonder how much benefit have you seen from touring? And do you think it's something valuable for bands to do nowadays? Now that we're kind of in the clear and we can go out now and schedule shows, do you think it's something still beneficial?
Yeah, definitely.
I think so.
So for tons of reasons. Like, first off, you start off in your hometown and then you played your hometown a few times and it's like, all right, what do we can't really play it again for a few months because people are going to stop showing up. So to keep going, you get out of town and a lot of really good things start happening from that. First off, people are posting about you. Like, you're not even having to post about yourself, although you should be posting about yourself. You have something to post about, but then like other people post about you and that counts a zillion times more than you posting about yourself can ever count. Like if there's a score guide out there somewhere, and I'm sure somebody has it, y'all might even know of it, like posting about yourself is worth 1 point. Somebody else posting about you being good is worth like 50 or 100 points. I don't know. So, and then on top of that, there are people who are like seeing you and are now like personal fans of you, where it's like it's different, like online, you know. And like, you, yeah, I'm sure your album is amazing. All of our albums are amazing. We've all made very amazing albums. But that's the point, is they're all out there, and like, you're a human being. So that face to face and like getting to meet people, and like, you can't put a price on the difference with like, hey, I met them, and like, we had tequila shots with them, and they're like the coolest people. I can't wait for them to come back. Like, there's nothing you can do online that's gonna compete with that. And then on top of that, yeah, now there's all these people out there that have, you know, five people or 10 people at a pop have your shirts and CDs out there, like in the world, that other people are seeing. And, you know, all these other things that happen out there that are good. You got there early and you were bored, so you went by a record store, and the person at the record store was wearing a Pentagram shirt, so you started talking about Pentagram with them, and maybe they didn't come to the show, but they remembered you, and you became online friends, and they came to your next show. I just, like, it's the same thing as showing up at your hometown gigs. Like, you just, if you're not showing up, then you're not in it. So all of that happens, and then this weird thing happens when you get back to your hometown. All of a sudden, people at home and other bands and promoters are looking at you a little different. Like, you're a little more serious all of a sudden. Like, hey, I saw my buddy in Brooklyn posted about having seen you guys. Like, you're not just some local band now. And it reciprocates back and forth like that. So, I mean, just these big things happen off of each other that way. And then on top of that, you just, like, it's the time of your life. Like, me and her, like, that's all the vacations we do. And we, like, you know, have just the best memories with our friends of being in all these places. And, like, you know, even crappy times where it's, like, a nasty hotel, or, like, the food sucked, or, like, we broke down and had to sleep in. Like, we got towed several times now. Like, the tow truck driver will just be like, all right, yeah, well, I guess I'll drop y'all off in this CVS parking lot, and then somebody can come along and help you in the morning. All right, it's like, okay,
try not to freeze to death.
Yeah, try not to freeze to death. Or what usually happens is they're like, all right, we'll drop you off in this Firestone parking lot, and then you can be the first in line in the morning. But yeah, so like, just all of that stuff is like fun and bonding, and then the effect it has on your playing is not something I want to understate either. Like, when you, that first gig, when you get back home and like play like your hometown after you've been out for a week or 2 weeks, it's fire. And everybody tells you, like, man, I've never seen y'all play like that before. It's so, like, the confidence and the power that you get from it. Like, so yeah. The important thing, I guess, is like, be economical about it. Like, you don't have to go to California to do it. You can just like start regionally and get out from there.
Great tips. And yeah. We are running out of time. I did want to briefly revisit a topic that came up on an earlier episode of the podcast, because you said, oh, we'll have to have another podcast episode talking about this topic, and then it never happened, about vinyl storage methods.
Oh gosh. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So I'm gonna let you take the floor on this and talk about it, and I don't really know much about it, but it's interesting.
Oh, well, we're monsters. We're no kind of role model. We have our IKEA Kallaxes, and that's Kallax, Kallax.
Oh, I'm familiar. Yeah.
And we sort of hoard them, and I want more of them. It's really hard to find shelves that are, I think it has to be 12 and a half. I think it's 12 and a half, in order to fit your vinyl.
That would make sense.
And like, tons of shelves are like 11.5 or 11.75, and it's the worst. And they changed milk crates so that they're specifically like too small for it. Because because people like me used to steal milk crates for our vinyl. So that we forced them to change it. So the Kallax is a good one. She has like this weird, it's like a, I don't know, it looks almost like a birdhouse, but it's big enough for albums. So we've got that. That's sort of like the, these are the albums we haven't sorted through. And then there's like the main Calax in the other room, which is the, not the, it's the 4x4. So it's like taller than I am. And that's all filled alphabetically. Then we have the one in here with a couple of shelves of it. And then she got this weird thing from her grandma that's like the top. If you open it, it's like a drawer with these little things. I think it's for music scores. But then down at the bottom, we figured out it's wide enough. And so that has a bunch too. And it was supposed to be our like current listening to, but it's just overflowing now too.
Yeah, I think it's important from what I understand to keep them upright and not stack them from what I understand. So we try to do that we're really bad about like, they are bad about like collecting dust and like, yeah. Be keeping them in order. Yeah, that's, I just have them stacked in like things we've kind of listened to recently in the last like year. It's just kind of like and not in any kind of order.
Yeah, you'll hear me like screaming from the other room like, where's the Lou Reed album? And it's like, I don't know where it went, but somewhere. But we try to keep them alphabetized in the other room. It just isn't very easy, and there's always new additions that have to get worked in. And then there's all these stupid, it's like, all right, do you put the Lou Reed with the Velvet Underground, or do they warrant separate areas? You know, so I did a lot of ins and outs.
Organization is a madness, man. So confusing, yeah. But it helps so much.
Do you have a particular way you'd like to keep yours?
I don't actually have any vinyl. I have one vinyl.
Very smart.
Yeah. That is the
That's
way
to get it.
For you.
it's something I'd like to be a part of, but I have a small house, so
look at that.
You know, it's just I have CDs, but I don't have any vinyl, but I appreciate everyone else's collection of them.
Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, my mom and a lot of my friends are like, simplify, and they don't understand like our like too many things. So it's definitely a lifestyle sometimes, a choice. and it can be kind of cluttered, but I don't know, that's kind of, we're kind of cluttered.
Yeah, I mean, even people don't buy CDs very much anymore, but I still like to own CDs. I like to have a physical copy. I like to like have something to hold in my hands, even though it's small.
Exactly.
The sound quality is great. So it's like, you know, I guess streaming is just as good, but it's just, you know, nice to have something physical.
It's all situational. Like in the car, we still listen to CDs.
Yeah.
Like at home, I'm so lazy that I'll YouTube an album I own, because it's like, it's easy than going all the way to the other room and doing that.
Fair. Yeah.
Totally. And having the whole visceral experience of, you know, having multiple senses being like
engaged
at the same time, it's pretty cool. It helps build memories more, I think, in a more profound way.
Yeah, that's true. Sure. Like it's because otherwise you're just so passive when it's on, like especially if it's on a Spotify playlist. Like I've done it where I'm like, man, that song was cool, but I'm not getting up to find out who it was, and like in one ear and out the other, and that's cool too sometimes, but like it's not this, you're not going to build the same relationship with it as you would.
100%. Well, I think that's about all we have time for today. Curtis, do you have anything you want to say before we go?
No, I know we've been doing this for a long time, so I'm not going to open up any possible can of worms.
No more cans of worms.
Nope. So I'll leave it this time.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure. And everyone listening, until next time, make sure you check out Book of Worms single when it comes out. Which day? When does it come out?
26. I don't know what day of the week it is, but that's when.
Wednesday, I think.
Wednesday.
Yes.
Yep.
So make sure you check out their single. And until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.
Yes.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.